Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Special.
Hello.
Derek's been a busy week.
It has.
Been busy.
But me, just work stuff.
Me too.
I wish it wasn't work busy.
Well, I bought a new shovel and a pickaxe.
I bought tomato plants.
So if anybody needs, how deep do you want those tomato plants buried? Because I can dig a trench now.
Whoever you're burying, we can plant tomato plants on top of it.
Yeah.
It's unlikely that somebody's going to look for a body under tomato plants.
Well, and since we're out there digging, if anybody has got a body they're looking at, if I dig one hole, I might as well just dig it a bit wider. I mean, if you're hiding bodies, there's no real, I don't know, like way you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, I don't think there's rules.
Is there any rules or?
Well, okay.
Is it considered bad form to bury two bodies together if you're like hiding them?
If you're doing it legally, there's rules.
Well, considering I'm burying a body in your backyard, I don't think that's legal.
It doesn't apply.
And the show gets off to a good start this week. I don't know. The show started and they just talked about burying bodies.
Well, I have heard that, I won't say where I heard it, but I have heard that if you bury somebody on your property and declare it as a cemetery, you save a ton of taxes.
Really?
Yeah.
So I could make my backyard
into a cemetery.
Into a cemetery. Does it have to have
neighbors won't like it.
Neighbors won't know. Police won't know. Just my accountant.
Well, no,
won't know.
You'd have to declare it
to my accountant.
The accountant would have to go through the city.
Says who?
You have to declare it. Property taxes.
Yeah. The cops don't have to get involved. It's just the finances.
There might be questions asked.
Yeah, well, whoever asks those questions is going to end up in my backyard now, aren't they? So, we got a bunch of stumps to take out in our backyard and that. So, just doing it with regular shovel and that. And I'm just sitting there one day thinking, you know what? I'm just going to go get me a pickaxe.
Yeah.
And I started using it. Like, oh, what a difference. But I made a post on Facebook saying, walking at a Home Depot with a shovel and a pickaxe and the confidence of a man looking to bury a body. The number of comments and tips I got.
Tips. This is what you do.
Don't forget to wear sunglasses and a hat. Don't forget duct tape and a drop cloth.
Use Quicklime.
Don't forget gloves. And way too many tips.
Way too many experts in this field of study.
Time to examine my friends list. That's all I'm saying.
How do you guys know so much?
Yeah, asking for a friend. Hey, anybody doing anything this Saturday night? 2 a.m? Asking for a friend. Or, instead of burying a body, I can just start digging them up.
There you go. There's
and just leave
too.
Them there. Dig up the bodies and just leave them there. just throw total mystery.
That would freak people out.
Right? Okay, people are stealing bodies, but they didn't steal any. They just left it. They just uncovered the body. He needed some air.
He needed some air.
Just airing out the dead guy. No, it's been a busy week just getting stuff done around here because there's so much stuff that we want to do on weekends that you're trying to get stuff done during the nights after work and because your weekends are free and you go paddling and all that sort of stuff. And Canadian Canoe Museum is open.
Yes.
Now I'm heading up to Tomogamy to Obabaka this weekend for what, Friday, Saturday.
Is it Obabaka or Obabaka?
Obabaka.
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 Obabaka. So I'm heading up there Friday afternoon. So this weekend, sort of canoe related.
Yep.
But not the canoe museum related.
Yes.
So I'm thinking maybe next weekend. What's that? Saturday, the May 25th of May. I might head to the canoe museum. So if anybody wants to go, are you going to come with?
I am. Yes.
Yeah, well, so we can talk.
I already texted Siobhan. She said we have nothing planned.
So we're not going.
So it's game on.
Game on. Canoe Museum, Saturday, May 25th. Mm-hmm. We'll pick a time. We'll check your schedule. We'll check my schedule. I'll talk to Kevin Callan, see if he wants to come along.
Yeah.
But, it's open to the public now, so we can go check it out and see all the canoes. We saw some – Kevin Callan actually put a little bit of a video of some of the things. So
yes.
Yeah. That's a lot of canoes on display now.
It's quite the facility.
Right? I wonder if we should bring our own canoes and go for a little paddle, too.
We could do that.
We could do
that. They have their own dock.
Or I'll just bring my canoe and then you can just jump into it.
Yeah.
Or under it.
Yeah, one
of the two. So Canadian Canoe Museum, Saturday, May 25th is the plan right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's penciled in. Well, if it's crap weather or something else comes up,
it's carved in stone, soft stone.
It's carved in really
chalky stone. It may change, subject to change.
It's on my countertop, written in flour.
It's carved in sand.
The Canoe Museum, Saturday, May 25th. So, if anybody wants to go, drop us a line if you're interested in joining us. We're just going to wander around like a bunch of idiots and check the place out. So.
Yeah.
Feel free to join us. Like I say, I'm Tomogamy bound this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Going to head up there to Obabaka and do some paddling and some photography and maybe catch a lake trout or 20. That'd be nice. I like to like at least latch into one to give it a little bit of a fight and maybe have a little lake trout taste.
So my buddies, they went to Algonquin Park last week, right? And I had to cancel on them. And so we were in a texting group. And so they said, oh, we're back, yada, yada, yada. Bugs, a little bit of rain. And I asked, any fish? And they mentioned something else. And there's other conversation. And then I said, did you catch any fish? And they came back angrily. If there was fish, there'd be hundreds of photos here, wouldn't there? It's like, ooh.
That's when you just come back, so...
So no fish.
That's a no? Oops. Mike Burns was up there.
Yes.
You neglected to tell him you would cancel.
Yeah, other pressing matters on my mind.
But it sounds like he had a good time and caught some fish up there.
Yep, he met up with my buddies that I had to cancel on.
So did he bring them fish?
No, I don't think he did.
Maybe your buddies have bad luck?
Well, no, Mike said that he didn't even feel like, because he had some fish on a stringer still alive, and he just felt, I don't feel like gotten them. So he just released all his fish.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I like to keep at least one. If I'm going to have a fire, I'll do
that. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
head it, tail it, gut it, put some spices inside, wrap it in foil, throw it over top, and just eat it. It's tasty.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I got to have at least one. I got a phone call from Wes Hansen.
Ah, yes.
He listened to our chat last week about things, and he said, we're right, there's more going on than people know.
Exactly,
yes. So, you know, all these people jumping the gun and making assumptions and all that.
Accusations.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny. The first time the story came out that there was charges about them being on a protected island, bird reserve, whatever. And you see all the trolls come out of the woodwork and pew-pewing everything. And then, you know, now that the charges have been cleared and there's still trolls throwing stuff at the wall and it's like...
Seeing if anything sticks. So, I had a little chit-chat. Well, not a little. It was like almost an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Chat with them and there's things coming out that...
Yeah.
Keep your eyes glued to the news. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that.
But I'd say what we said...
Yeah, I told him I wouldn't go...
No, but what I was saying, going to say is that whatever we already talked about, he says we were pretty close.
Yeah. So, other than that... Yeah, it's been a busy week.
It has.
A lot of work. I hate work now. Every day I go into work, all happy and cheerful. Then I finish my coffee and I think, I could retire.
Absolutely.
So I call Tracy and she says, no, can't retire. So I hang up the phone and I go back, have another coffee.
Can I retire yet?
Can I retire now?
Yeah.
It's almost lunch.
I was ready for retirement this morning. I was a little bit late for work, so I came in at about the time when most other people come in, and it was mayhem. It's like, okay, do not arrive at work late anymore.
Right?
I normally arrive around 6, 5 to 6 or whatever, and today it was like, what is going on with these people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like getting around one truck.
Yeah.
Everybody's lined up behind the one truck, and you finally get around them, and there's nobody in front of them for miles.
Yes. Why are you in this lane?
Why are you in this lane? Why are you even out this early if you're not? Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not why we're here.
We're not, This is, yeah, we'll save those conversations for the
welcome for paddling to Sean adventure. And Derek's therapy hour.
Yeah, Sean and Derek's paddling after dark hour.
Podcast, yeah. Oh, the things we gripe and complain about. Could be worse. Could definitely be worse.
After dark, between the paddles.
So I've been reading a lot of articles lately. And the South China Morning Post, which is a popular paper for everybody to read, you know, especially over here in Canada. Ian Lloyd Neubauer wrote an article, Hidden Thailand. He explored on a kayaking trip up the country's Andaman coast with untamed nature and unique lodgings en route. 18-day kayak trip from Saitun to Phuket along Andaman Sea coast reveals beaches and islets that would otherwise go unseen in a quiet part Ooh. Of Thailand. And I like this article because I don't know the number of people lately that have been going to Thailand.
There's like, a lot. Yeah.
I'm like, there's always, like, for probably the last 6 months, there's every other week, there's people on my friends list that, hey, look, we're in Thailand. And, well, I think Scott Robinson, Man Camping, he just went.
Oh, did he?
Last month.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, why is everybody going to Thailand? And then this article comes out and, all right, well, the journey goes through mangroves, estuaries, coastal villages. Some of the best views are enjoyed from affordable accommodation with plenty of character. So the whole basis of this was in 2006, German travel magazine Hidden Europe published a manifesto for slow travel. And it's been pointed out to me that apparently we talk about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Slowing down,
yes.
Take the paddle,
yes.
Relax,
yeah.
Enjoy your time. Don't rush it, mm-hmm. right? And having said that, we're going to do the Brent Run again next year. So this manifesto for slow travel is an essay that argues journeys should be a moment to relax rather than a stressful interlude imposed between home and destination. Slow travel re-engineers time, transforming it into a commodity of abundance rather than scarcity. Slow travel also reshapes our relationship with places, encouraging and allowing us to engage more intimately with the communities through which we travel. And that's true, because if you're taking back roads to places, and
yes.
you slow down going through these little towns to see what's there.
Yeah.
And if you pre-plan your route like I tend to do, then there's all these little towns you hit and stop and check this out, Whereas if you hit like the major highway and skirted all this, you know, you're point A to point B in 2 hours, whereas you take the back route to point A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, M, V, Q, R, T, V. You know, that could be like 6-7 hours, but you've now hit all these different little places. So that's what this sort of hits on. So this Ian Neubauer, slow traveled from the southernmost town in the province on Thailand's Andaman coast to the resort island of Phuket. The journey takes 7 or 8 hours in a car or bus, but he did it in kayak over 18 days.
Nice.
Okay, so that is a little slower.
That's just a bit slower, right?
The slow pace allowed him to completely absorb the nuanced beauty of the Andaman coast and its offshore islands, spend quality time with locals, and discover a number of outstanding beaches, islet, villages, hotels that he otherwise would never have seen. And he talks about some of his journey in this article that he wrote. He says, I come across the first of these gems on my second day at sea after pausing for a break at an archipelago of two islets on the Mukoh Phetra National Park. And I'm telling you right now, I'm going to blow some of these names. So whatever, dude.
Yeah.
The gin clear waters of the narrow channel between the islands are as calm as a lake and possess coral gardens alive with tropical fish, which is pretty cool when you're thinking you're in a kayak and you're looking down, you're seeing all the tropical fish, right? When I land on a sugar white beach at Koh Lidi Yai, the larger of the two islets, a ranger moves me on as it is a reserve for endangered swiftlets that make edible bird nests, a delicacy always in demand throughout Asia. I gotta look more into bird nests. Like, they do bird nest soup and stuff like that. Like, yeah. What is... I mean, I think of a bird nest in my backyard. Yeah. I ain't eating it. I don't care how much you pay me. I ain't eating it. But this is going to... I got to look into that.
The bird nest soup thing?
Yeah. Because these what they're eating is these bird nests.
Yeah, I looked into it.
And?
It's... So, the guy... There's a certain time of year that they're allowed to harvest these bird nests. Obviously, it's not nesting season.
But what's the nests made of?
I'm getting there. I don't know why this has become a thing, but it's mostly bird saliva.
What?
It's bird spit. The birds, like, they spit up stuff to hold their nest together. And so what they do is they soak these nests, the grasses, and they get all the congealed spit, bird spit out of it. And then they make soup. This is like a...
Are these the same people that get that coffee that the cat eats
and
digests?
Luwak.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the cats eat the coffee beans.
And their digestive juices. And then, yeah.
It changes it. And, yeah. And so from that, so there's a bunch of people that are trying stuff now because of the Kopi Luwak coffee, which is very expensive.
Yeah.
They've got made, there's now people, because that's so expensive coffee, right? And it's in demand. And so there's a elephant sanctuary in, I can't remember where, Sumatra or something. Anyways, so this elephant sanctuary, they're feeding these coffee beans to the elephants. And elephants are notorious for not digesting much of their food. So it passes through the system really quickly, mostly undigested. And so they take these beans from the elephants and then they do, you know, they break it down and roast them. And so it's elephant coffee. I don't know what they call that one. But yeah, it's just, it's like, it's so strange that it like...
You know, I'm going to eat whatever comes out of that elephant's butt.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'll grind it. I'll make it with some water and then drink it so it lasts a little longer. Yeah, freaks. But anyway.
Bird nest soup, though, like these guys.
I thought it was grasses and stuff.
They boil it down to break free all the saliva. And they're only allowed to harvest I think 3 weeks every year. And whatever they gain from harvesting over these nests in these caves on this island, it's a year's wages for them. They survive the whole year on this one harvest.
Well, it's a delicacy always in demand around Asia. So.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Anyway, back to what we were talking about before we got, I'm not hungry now. The reception is different on the smaller island of Kolidilek, where a ranger gives me a free packed lunch of bird nest soup.
Yeah, it's mostly in Vietnam, where I think this island is from.
In Thailand. Well, this is Thailand, right?
Yeah.
The only other visitors are a family from Malaysia mucking around on kayaks, which are also freely provided. There is next to nothing online about the place or how to get there. But I later learned you can charter a wooden boat at Port Town in Pak Bara. Following afternoon, having planned camp at Koh Sukhon, an unexpected downpour drives me towards Thung Hoa, a little visited coastal district of caramel-colored rivers and mangrove forests. After 9 days at sea, I reach Koh Lanta, the halfway mark of my journey. It welcomes throngs of tourists every day during the high season, but is larger than the islands in the Andamans, about 35 kilometers or 22 miles from end to end. Therefore, still harbors undeveloped beaches such as Bamboo Beach, the most southerly cove on the island's west coast. So he's 9 days in now, checking out all. And it's the little towns that you can come across and do a little bit of sightseeing. Bamboo Beach is by no means hidden. There are a few hundred tourists here when I make landfall, but it does not feel busy as visitors are spread out over more than a kilometer of fine white sand or dozing on day beds and hammocks surrounding one of two rustic beach bars that sell beer, smoothies, and sandwiches. Nothing says a beach day like beer, smoothies, and sandwiches, eh? Closest hotel stands a few hundred meters behind the beach, but if you bring a tent, like I have, you can pitch it on a grassy knoll overlooking the beach for 150 baht. $4 US.
Yes, I know, eh?
Yeah. You know what? When we went to Mexico, I remember they say haggle with the taxi drivers and the mm-hmm. and the people in the stalls at the market yeah. and stuff. And you start haggling and you get down 1,000 pesos and yeah, right. And then you start doing the math and yeah, I knocked 50 cents off that price. It really, I mean, you know, you see these big amounts in their currency.
Because the numbers
and then
are,
ours yeah, is just yeah. 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're feeling bad. Like, yeah, I just ripped them off 50 cents. We'll just pay the 50 cents, dude. Includes access to clean toilets and shower facilities. The Boho Hostel and restaurant is set in a whitewashed stilt home with polished wooden floorboards just a few doors down from Saladan Pier, which has 8 guest rooms. First 7 are box-like, but room number 8, which is set right on the riverfront and has a large picture window and a private deck, offers exceptional value at 900 baht a night, so which like is like 20 bucks.
20 bucks, 25 bucks.
You know? That's why it's so easy to live there. I mean, you sell your house here and you can go live there
yeah,
forever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Even if this room is booked, you can still while away time watching boats coming and going at a riverfront restaurant that offers well-presented tourist staples such as green curry, pad thai noodles with prawns. So this is just like you can camp out on the beach in your tent,
mm-hmm.
you know, unpack your kayak, throw that down there, wander around, get some good food yeah. rather than just a boil in the bag thing. Right?
There's, I don't want to distract you from the story, but
oh, everything distracts me.
But just talking about how cheap it is to live and prices and whatever. Of course, it's expensive for them.
Yeah,
but people who come from North America and stuff like that, or U.S., Canada, our money we have make more money, right? Anyways, there's a I saw a thing where there's couple Mexican towns, coastal towns, that are kicking tourists out. Like, you're not allowed to live here. Get out. Because so many of them are coming to these coastal towns in Mexico
mm-hmm.
that they bring all their money, and it's raising the prices above what the locals can afford. So the grocery stores are going, oh, all these rich Americans are here. And so they raise their prices to make more money. Now the locals can't afford to live in these little towns because all these rich Americans are moving in, buying summer homes and whatever, and so
it should have a dual money system.
It's hard to do.
If you weren't born here,
yeah.
then you pay more.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tourist price and right? local price.
Yeah.
So, yeah, kick them out.
Kick them out. He says, I find another riverfront hotel worth writing home about the following day at a fishing village in Kojum or Crab Island. An extinct volcano.
Ooh.
Most of the tourists who come here stay at one of the 30-odd properties on the Andaman Sea or the west side of the island, but I approached Kojum from the coastal side, paddling up a long, narrow estuary until I reached a fishing village set at an intersection in the sea broken up by half a dozen islets. And that's the thing here. When you're out there, if you got the protection, you can visit all these little
yes, exactly.
islets, right?
Yeah.
Village is home to friendly fisher folk, and the Bakrukam homestay, which is set over a river with 3 freshly painted rooms with futon mattresses, decorative crab pillows, each at 900 baht a night. There's also a family room with 4 bunk beds. Relaxing on a beanbag on the deck at dusk while listening to the water lap under the river house as birds and fish jump in and out of the water is one of the highlights of my journey.
Sounds awesome.
Doesn't it, though? This is a kayak trip, right?
Yeah.
Like, so you gotta keep remembering that.
Yeah.
These hostels and guest houses show you do not have to spend big money to have excellent accommodation in Thailand. Although, after a long day at sea, anything that is not wet is a luxury for me.
So true. So true.
You know, I mean, yeah, if you can, like, go from hostel to hostel to hostel mm-hmm. or something at that yeah. kind of price.
Like, I wonder what kind of planning it. I've never planned a trip, something like that. So I wonder how, like, how
you'd have to plan beforehand.
You'd have to, but
right? Again, he brought his tent as well, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if all of a sudden he says, you know what, this looks like a nice place, I'm just going to pitch my tent here.
Yeah, I wonder if he winged it or
yeah,
winged it. Past winged. Tense is wanged it.
Wanged it.
Wong it is future tense. I don't know.
Winged it.
Winged it.
Winging. We just. Wung it. Stop that.
Sorry, I lost control.
These hostels and guest houses show you you do not have to spend a lot of money. But sometimes it pays to pay a little more. A small beachfront property in a sleepy village on the upper west coast of Koh Yao Yai, one of two large mountainous islands rising from the bay between Krabi and Phuket, is a perfect example. The Sea Breeze House has six modern bungalows, three facing the garden, three facing the sea, all with balconies, air conditioning, and hot water. Oh. They are similar to the other places I stay at during the trip that costs an average of $20 US a night. Oh. 20 bucks a night.
I know, that's crazy, eh?
I definitely want one facing the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Guests while away their time here sunbathing and staring at the sea. And the sunsets are a panoramic fresco of moving colors that change from yellow to violet to red before settling on a purple shade of black.
Huh.
What a trip.
Yeah.
But he just slowed it right down.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just taking the bus, boom, boom, 8 hours, 18 days. You got to think how many people do that, though.
Yeah.
There's probably not a lot. Maybe people go out paddling for the day. Or maybe go out somewhere, stay a night, come back. But 18 days is pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah.
And like I say, it's just something that all of a sudden I see all these people go into Thailand. And then I see this article. I'm thinking, none of them are doing this.
No, oh, no, no. Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Everybody's like doing a resort. The
all
stays
all and, you can do is yeah, inclusive
this
resorts.
Sounds so and, much better. So much see, more interesting.
This is the sort of thing I was looking for if I went down to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But even like canoe tripping into the backcountry of Mexico. And I just can't seem to find.
I don't know that I'd do that.
Well, if you're with a guide company.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I've heard some horror stories.
Of Mexico? No, Colombia.
Mexico.
Really?
Yeah. They're in an election cycle right now. They've already lost 24 people who are like running for mayor, running for...
I'm not running for mayor.
But no, the...
I'm running from the monkeys.
What I'm saying is that...
Swinging from the trees.
The crime is so high right now. Like, it's like they're...
Are you talking northern Mexico? Like Juarez?
No, anywheres.
Really?
Yeah, the cartels are taking over. They're expanding out and doing all kinds of... It's not just drugs these days. It's all kinds of stuff.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know that... Maybe it's just me being nervous, but...
I think you're just being paranoid. My dog told me so. I think my dog's right some days.
Another thing I got to thinking about the other day, and it's like... If you wanted a hot bath, you'd boil some water, fill a bathtub, and pour it in by bucket. But imagine, like, what showers came about in the 50s or 60s. So, all this history and people enjoying a nice hot shower after a hot day, that only started happening, like, 60 years ago. 80 years ago.
The 50s were more... you know what? That's something I've never looked at is when showers were.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you go any earlier than that, when you're back in the
you just went for
early
swim.
1900s,
you just went
1800s.
For didn't matter.
Bath.
But showers.
You one of those posh people.
Showers.
Bath. Yeah. Ooh, look at that. Must be July. Time for my yearly.
So it just came up in a thing. Some guy was talking about it. And he was also saying that in North America, what's wrong with North Americans? Nobody has bidets. In Japan, it's like there's bidets everywhere.
Because we know how to clean our butts? I don't know. I don't think I'd want one.
I've never tried one.
Hey, somebody put a fountain in my toilet. anyway, so yeah, that sounds like a pretty cool trip. And it doesn't, I mean, you're paying your airfare over there. And
yes.
You rent or bring a collapsible. John Brower just got himself one of those track kayaks.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. So you can throw one of those on a plane.
Yeah.
Bring it with you and then your
it's
kayak.
It's basically
for,
a piece of luggage folded up.
Right?
Hmm.
So, I mean, these trips are totally doable.
Yep.
If you're going over that way.
Yeah.
Then spend a few days. But yeah, no, like I would like to go down to Mexico and go to like Cancun or something or Puerto Vallarta or something like that.
Yeah.
Do a go with a guide interior for a few days sort of deal, just to check out the off the beaten track sort of thing, right? Because I cannot go to an all-inclusive resort and sit on a beach or the pool bar all day.
That's not my thing myself.
No, when I was there, like, we were walking everywhere and just checking things out. And the only thing we didn't do was the bull ring, the bullfights. Oh, I just didn't want to see that.
Yeah.
I had no interest in it. Yeah. You know, and I don't think they do it anymore, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I do.
I think it got banned.
So my
brother, or are they using the Velcro sticky
spears? Well, I don't know,
spears?
But I know my brother, he went down, within the last 6 months, he was down in Mexico somewheres, and he was watching bullfights.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Were they still killing them?
Maybe it was Europe. No, I don't know.
Okay, Mexico down there.
Yeah.
Europe over there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of where he went. Now I have to go look.
Now I gotta look.
But he spent a week there. Maybe it was the Arctic. Spent a week there. Do you know, like, the running of the bulls type thing?
Oh, Pamplona, Spain.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pamplona, Spain, down in Mexico.
But you know why they run the bulls, right?
To weed people out of the gene pool.
Yeah. And they're moving the bulls into an area where you can do bullfighting. It's traditional migration of the bulls into an area for bullfighting.
I thought it was just to get rid of the slow people.
they do get rid of quite a few of those. Right?
You should have ran faster, buddy.
Yeah, they do some. Well, there's the
The tourists that come over just to run with the bulls.
Yeah, and they all wear white, so you can see the blood easier, I guess. And then there's the tomato thing, and I think that's in Italy too.
Where it's just, that's in Italy.
The streets are pouring with those tomato fights.
The tomato harvest thing.
What a waste of tomatoes,
right? Hey, don't you have tomatoes? You just bought tomatoes.
Didn't we talk
about
that?
When do they harvest?
We didn't talk about that.
When do they harvest those?
When?
Yeah, when are you going to harvest those?
I bought a bunch of cherry tomatoes, so it's...
Oh, they're not real tomatoes?
They're real tomatoes. They're just smaller.
If I come over to your house and we try to have a tomato fight, those little ones ain't going to do nothing.
You're not having a tomato fight with my prize tomatoes.
But they would have a tomato fight with his prize tomatoes.
I have six different varieties of tomato. Some of them are, one variety is a larger tomato, but then five of the varieties are various cherry tomatoes.
Cherry tomatoes, plum tomatoes, grape tomatoes.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You're no fun. Anyway, so if you're going to Thailand, think about doing something a bit different. Mm-hmm. Do a little bit of a kayak paddle. You like fishing. We talked fishing. We like doing some fishing.
Yeah.
You say you never catch anything.
I occasionally
do. But
we
know that's a lie. Because I was on a trip with you last summer.
Yeah.
And all you did was catch. And I just watched you catch. And all you do is bitch and complain. I mean, I can't think. You lying bag of dog poo.
It's very rare.
We got footage.
It's rare.
We got photos. Oh, look at this big fish. Oh, look at this fish. I never catch
that
thing.
That big one I caught, I honestly thought I, like, snagged a branch or something.
Well, I thought you snagged a branch.
That fish did not fight.
He's a lunker.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just sat to the bottom.
Yeah.
So I'm a branch. Yeah. Be the branch.
Be
the log. Be one with the bottom of the lake.
So I honestly was surprised when it was not a branch that broke the water.
Yeah.
Broke the surface. I was like,
branches don't jump like that and waggle. Have you ever thought about a fish finder?
I have always thought about a fish finder. I just... like, I've seen, like, John Babluck, he's got a few fish finders, and I went fishing with him a couple times, and his cool little fish finder he's got, little screen, but I never thought to look into it, because I thought, well, I'm not spending money, big bucks on that.
Well, I bought one many years ago.
Yeah.
And it shows me the bottom, and it shows me where the fish are suspended.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make them bite. Kind of useless.
Yeah.
Anyway, Field and Stream has come out with their list of six best fish finders for kayak fishermen, which kind of throws me for a loop. Why only kayak fishermen? Unless you're heading out on the ocean or something, right?
Yeah.
Some of these would work for canoe and kayak and stand-up paddleboard fishermen as
Absolutely. Right? Yeah, and so I think for them, like, I think the current fad that's been going on for about 6 years, 8 years is there's a lot of kayak fishermen out there. Yeah.
And we talk about the guys out in the ocean with the big sailfish. And
yeah, fish bigger than their kayak.
Being attacked by sharks.
Giant groupers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After buying your paddlecraft, paddle, and PFD, and all your fishing gear such as rod, reel, and tackle, the next logical step for most anglers is adding a fish finder. And like I say, I bought one years ago that I used for maybe 3 years, and then it's just been sitting. It's one of those old hummingbird ones.
But it's not designed for canoe, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
Well, designed for anything. There's a suction cup at the bottom. Yeah. You stick it in your bottom of your kayaks, bottom of your canoe, bottom of your boat, whatever.
What kind of batteries does it take?
Double A's.
Yeah,
I think it takes like eight double A's or something like that.
Huh.
If you want to borrow it, let me know. I'll dig it out. I know exactly where it is.
Well, now that I see this list, I've got my...
Oh, this thing is like the old Game Boy compared to a brand new Xbox or PS5, right?
Yeah. Atari.
Yeah. It's like an old Atari Commodore 64, that sort of thing. Next logical step for most anglers is adding a fish finder. Some anglers want only to a compact or portable fish finder with limited features. Others demand side view, 360-degree imaging, and fish finder with a GPS, which adds a powerful navigation tool to stay on course and monitor speed. Something like that, if you're going to be doing the same lakes, I would think, or if you're out somewhere and you hit a shoal,
if you
find, want to know where that hot spot
is, or if you're doing like coastal Florida or you're doing in the whatever you don't want to, hey, which channel am I in?
Yeah.
So the GPS would come in handy that way.
And you want to know where that black sailfish dragged you out 6 miles, where exactly you are.
Where shore is, which way to shore.
All these features impact cost. You can get a basic model for less than $100 or break the bank and get one with everything. And they've listed 6 best fish finders for paddle craft available now. Like I say, they did this from the sort of the kayak point of view, but from Lowrance, Hummingbird, Garmin, and more. There is only one way to make best recommendations for fishing gear, and that's on-the-water testing. We've also talked to manufacturers, industry professionals about what they look for in fish finders, and we based our selections on the criteria below. Portability. How easy the fish finder is to install and take out. Screen. How big is the screen? Can it withstand to be out in sunlight? Can you need it? Use it and read it in direct sunlight? Technology. Does it have a GPS? What about down view scanning and side imaging? Durability. Can the unit withstand the rugged abuse of being out in the elements all day?
I would hope a few of these things are true, because if you have it on a kayak... Oh, I didn't get the waterproof one.
Yeah. Wow.
and this one doesn't work in sunlight.
Right. Fish finder is a complicated and powerful tool that has to survive life on board your paddle craft. Means it must be tough enough to survive constant exposure to sun, water, and dirt. It should have the highest level of waterproofing and easy to read screen and corrosion resistant electrical connections.
Key important things.
Right. They go through a few things here. Size. Fish finder should never get in the way of your fishing or paddling. If you don't have a lot of room on your boat, consider a compact fish finder. Portability. If you don't have room for a fish finder, you don't want to install a mount for one, or simply don't want it set up and remove a fish finder display and battery before and after each trip, a portable fish finder is a good solution. There's wireless ones as well.
Are there any wrist-mounted ones?
I
haven't read your notes.
Close. There's a phone one with just that little ball like John has.
Yeah.
GPS technology, in addition to a fish finder being a fish finding tool, many kayak anglers want it to be a navigation tool too. Makes sense, because combining a fish finder and GPS allows you to keep an eye on the fish, the structure below the boat, while mapping a course and tracking speed. Using the unit in split screen mode means you can do both at the same time. Side imaging technology, side view fish finder, send a signal to the boat, signal to the side of the transducer to capture images of fish and structure to the right and left of the boat. Fish finders with a 360-degree transducer do the same thing in all directions to create a live view of fish swimming by. Those with CHIRP, C-H-I-R-P, like a bird, technology use signals at various frequencies to create a more detailed image of fish and structure. Those signals can distinguish a bass from a bluegill and rocks from trees. That is so far beyond my fish
finder. Yeah.
You know? Oh, that's a bass. There's a pickerel. Hey, there's a sturgeon down there. Hey, there's a body.
And the side scan would be good. Like if you're, say you're by a dock, you could tell if there's fish under the dock. Yeah. Or if you're on a riverbank and there's an undercut, you tell if there's fish underneath the undercut.
Or if you're going
right?
by a shoal, right? Or yeah, a drop-off exactly, sort of right? deal, right? Yeah. You know, oh yeah, there's fish hanging off the side of the drop-off. Price with all advancements in fish finder technology, the biggest step forward has been lowering the price. Today, anglers can have powerful features in the best fish finders in a kayak for under $100. CHIRP stands for Compressed High Intensity Radar Pulse. CHIRP fish finders transmit a longer pulse over a longer pulse than traditional sonar, putting more energy into the water column with a true broadband frequency range of up to 117 kilohertz. Instead of pinging a single frequency like traditional two-dimension sonar, chirping devices transmit a sweeping range of frequencies. CHIRP sonar technology interprets each frequency individually, allowing for a clearer image with higher resolution and better separation of targets. So that allows you to get the different sizes of stuff, know the difference between types of fish, size, trees versus rocks and all that sort of stuff. That seems to be the big thing since the last time I looked at fish finders. So the six of them. Best overall is the Lawrence Hook Reveal 5. The screen size 5 inches. It's 9 by 7 by 7.5 inches.
That's pretty big.
Right? Sort of.
Have you seen pictures? I got pictures here.
Yep. Touch screen and buttons. The pros, perfect size for a kayak, durable, easy to read. The cons, expensive.
Yeah, $700.
Yeah, it was designed with kayak fishing in mind. 5-inch waterproof screen is out of the way and easy to see from the kayak seat. Because a lot of people will be sitting in their kayaks in the seat there with their fishing pole or whatever.
And
up front between
by
their feet
toes,
sort of
yeah.
deal, right? 5-inch waterproof, like I say. Large buttons can be pushed with a paddle, blade, or a rod tip. Special coating on the screen keeps the display visible in direct light. Because that is nothing like trying to look at a phone screen or something like that when the sun's hitting it.
Oh, I know.
Can't see it. Auto-tuning sonar. Adjust settings based on water and bottom conditions. Lawrence offers an easy installation kit that provides a solid mounting solution. Takes 5 minutes to install and stays out of the way. Has a basic GPS plotter so you can mark waypoints, monitor speed, distance, and navigate with confidence. That's their best overall.
Mm-hmm.
$700.
Yeah, that's a lot.
The best fish finder GPS is from Garmin, of course. Echo Map 73CV fish finder chart plotter combo. 7 inches. Doesn't give all the dimensions. Touch screen and buttons. Again, pros. Big, readable screen, even bright sunlight. Preloaded with Navionics maps. Sonar sharing capabilities with other Echo Map Plus units. Cons. Expensive. Starting to see a
trend.
A little bit of a pattern here. Adding a GPS to a fish finder packs 2 valuable tools in one package. Kayak anglers are always looking to save space, so the best fish finder for a kayak should double as a high-powered GPS. Yep. Hmm. Easy to read, glare-resistant touch screen that is supported with push buttons, even if your hands are covered with fish slime and swamp muck. You can go from touch screen to buttons without losing functionality. The Echo Map 74S 7-inch screen is large enough to see split screens, but small enough to stay out of the way. Again, they have the CHIRP sonar and regular traditional sonar as well. Display is vivid and clear, and the colors and contrast can be adjusted to provide a clear video of fish swimming below. Hosting Garmin's detailed Blue Chart G3 maps, GPS relies on high-quality navigation charts that are constantly updated. High-contrast bathymetric readings make it easy to find structure and navigate the backwaters. Users can edit the map with custom information in even more accurate navigation. Also has a smartphone app that can be connected to update charts and add user notes.
It's smaller than the first one, so
it's kind of off. I mean, it's got a lot of stuff going for it.
Yeah,
you know, like I said, you can update your charts and you can add your notes and your little waypoints and stuff like that. But that's if you're hitting the same spot all the time right?
This one's only about $350. The one I found.
That's not bad.
Yeah,
$350 compared to $700.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Amazon Canada.
Okay. Now, the best one with side imaging is the Hummingbird Helix 7 Chirp Mega SI GPS G3 Nav Fish Finder Plus. Mm-hmm. 7-inch screen size. Has buttons, not a touch screen. The pros, clear images, 125 feet range of side imaging, includes Navionics Plus. Cons, expensive. Again.
Yeah.
Interface is not user friendly. So that's why I think it's when I hear that, I'm thinking you got to press this button three times, then press that one, then press this one, then press that one twice, sort of deal to get to the function you want. Uses high-powered signals to produce the most detailed depiction of fish and structure on the side of the kayak. And again, this would be perfect for when you're cruising along a drop-off or something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Megaside Imaging Fish Finder uses the most powerful sonar signal available to create high-definition images of structure and fish clear enough for users to distinguish between individual fish and even species.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose with AI and stuff.
That's like, this is so far beyond what mine does. There's a blob. Oh, look, it's a black blob.
There's a bigger blob. There's a smaller blob.
There's a smaller black blob there. In addition to high quality sonar, the Helix 7 also has basic navigation map and bathymetric charts. The base GPS is perfect for setting a course and monitoring speed and track, and can be upgraded with more advanced mapping software. The best compact one is the Garmin Striker Vivid 4 CV Fish Finder. 4 inches screen size. 8x11x6 inches. And again, it has buttons. Pros, Vivid Scanning Sonar includes Chirp Traditional Sonar and Chirp Clear View Scanning Sonar. High Sensitivity GPS. It's affordable. Cons, small screen.
Yeah,
4 inches?
These are...
If you're used to looking at a phone all the time...
It's like a small...
But, phone. I mean, this isn't going to be up your feet either, I'm thinking.
Yeah. It's not... And you're in a canoe or kayak, right?
Yeah.
Right, so it's not like you're looking for a giant widescreen fish finder.
Awesome, a big 50-inch screen TV on the front of your... See the fish waving at you in that thing. Garmin Striker Vivid 4 CV Fish Finder squeezes a top-quality sonar and editable GPS plotter into a 4-inch fish finder. Traditional dual-beam Chirp sonar, along with high-definition Chirp clear-view sonar... Use the Chirp when searching for fish and structure, then switch to ClearView downscan sonar to explore a hot spot in detail. Hmm. That's pretty cool. So you get the basic one that just, oh, there's fish over there. Then you tootle over there and use switch modes to see what exactly it is you're looking
at. Yeah, and I can see some, you can get some bottom feature screens, and this one's nice.
Complement the powerful sonar, Garmin included a high sensitivity GPS with quick draw contours mapping. Users can mark waypoints, monitor course and speed, then tie the GPS into a fish finder and record depth contours to create a custom map covering up to 2 million acres. Because Lord knows I'm going to paddle 2 million acres. Wow, that's a bit overkill, I think.
I suppose maybe if you're if you got into we talked
sport
about
sport fishing.
We like 6 weeks ago we talked about you know, you can get into college.
Oh, the university teams.
Yeah,
fishing teams. Team, yeah. But still, 2 million acres?
Well, if you're competitive.
Like, you're going to have to, everywhere you paddle, you will never delete that information. And you still will never get 2 million
acres. No. I've paddled every lake in Algonquin Park. I've
paddled every lake in the world and still not filled it. Bright high contrast color screen provides clear views of maps and sonar images, allows you to choose from seven different color schemes, so you can choose one that provides the cleanest view for the conditions. Hmm. The best portable. I think this is the one, like you were saying, John Babalik has. Deeper chirp to castable and portable fish finder. Screen size, phone. Dimension size, a ball. Control method, smartphone. Pros, castable. Sends a signal to 394 feet. Strong battery life. Cons, not ideal for boats.
Hold on.
I'm thinking speedboats.
So they, I think what they're saying here is that if it's not ideal for boats, what they're saying is if you're walking a stream, you're on the side of a lake, you're on foot.
Nope. No, fast boats.
It's you think that's kayaks. What they mean?
Yep. Yep. Deeper's concept for a portable fish finder is simple. The angler ties the golf ball size transducer to a fishing line and casts it away from the boat. A Wi-Fi signal from the transducer sends images of the bottom and fish to a full-color display on a smartphone app. I'm one word ahead. A fart smone. Don't forget your fart smone. The deeper chirp technology sends signals at different frequencies to create a more detailed image. It has three beam angles allowing for a wide view of an area or a focus on a specific target. It takes accurate readings in water up to 330 feet deep. That's pretty deep.
That's incredible.
And a Wi-Fi signal that works up to 330 feet from the boat. If you don't want to cast the transducer, an adapter allows you to connect the transducer to the kayak so it works like a traditional bottom machine without cables or a battery. Users can store and search information in the fishing log, share pictures and stories with other anglers on the deeper network.
Hmm.
So it sounds like it just fits in your pocket.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you can, put it on your line, cast way out when you see the fish, then I guess have your second rod that with the actual lure on it that you're going to cast. And check it out. That one sounds pretty good. But that sounds like the one you said John Babalik has.
It's
just this little ball thing, right?
That one looks familiar.
Yeah. The last one here is the best budget one. Hummingbird Piranha Max 4 Fish Finder. 4.3-inch screen size. Control method is buttons. Pros. Affordable. Dual beam sonar. Depth sonar up to 320 feet. Cons, only sonar capable. No GPS. So if you're just going out for the day and you just want to see where the fish are, what the structure is.
Yeah.
Right? For under $100 sort of deal. As fish finder technology advances, savvy anglers can get up the top of the line features at a great price. Hummingbird Piranha Max 4 costs less than $100, still produces high quality definition color image of fish and the bottom. 256 color display provides high contrast target separation between fish and bait. At least it's color.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Right. Well, because it's using your phone.
Yeah. No, this one actually got the screen
on
it.
I'm thinking of the previous one.
Yeah. The wide range of colors also allows the user to determine hard bottom from soft. Bright 4.3-inch color display is supported by high-powered dual-frequency transducer at 2,400 watts power output, transducer sends two signals simultaneously to pick up even small bait fish and the slightest change in bottom contour. So it still does what you want. It's finding the fish. It's finding the bottom. It's finding the structure. You still have to be able to catch the fish yourself.
Yes.
None of these exactly. are going to do it for you. But, yeah, like a lot of these here with the extra little bits they have, that's pretty cool.
I'm trying to find... I saw a video the other day. They were on a jetty down in Florida or something, and he had his phone strapped to his wrist, and the way he was talking, and I hadn't really thought of it because I didn't know this was going to be a topic, but he was saying that the line itself transmits a signal, and so he was getting a live camera feed from his lure, and so you could see the fish coming up to the lure, and so the fishing line was itself transmitting the video signal, and so I can't find it.
But where the camera would be, where?
On your lure. Or above your lure. You tie it to the... So your lure's down below it, and it's looking at your lure. Lure.
That sounds weird.
It does.
Anyway, you see it... yeah, send it to me. Let me check that out.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a new fish finder with all the bells and whistles, check out Field and Stream. They've got that list of six best for kayak fishermen, but like I say, it doesn't have to be a kayak fishermen. If you're in a canoe or stand-up paddleboard, it'll work just the same. Because I know mine is supposed to be for boats, like power boats, and it works fine on a canoe.
Mm-hmm.
Point it down, point it to the side, point it where the fish are, and it will find it. Yeah. So, yeah, it's shown me where fish are before. I've caught fish, and so check them out.
It would be amazing, eh?
Wouldn't it? But yeah, these new ones now are just, I don't know. I can do without one.
Yeah, I've done quite well without one so far. It's just
not consistently.
It'd be a toy.
You know what? And that's exactly what it was. We wanted it just so I could see what the bottoms were. Because we were hitting a lot of the same lakes at the time I got it. So it's like, oh, well, you know what? We know what's there. We know what's there. We know it's here. So we got to be fishing here at this time and that time. It sort of helps out a little bit to get you to where the fish are.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have the right lures, the right techniques, whatever, you're not catching them if they're there or not. Right? Unless you use dynamite, that's a different story.
That's a completely different story.
One last thing here. Canadian fire map. You sent this to me because we've been chit-chatting about this, I hope this coming season is not like last year with fire after fire after fire. Everywhere you want to go, there's fires and there's smoke and all that. Canadian Wildland Fire Information System. They have an interactive map that shows things such as fire danger, active fires, fire history, fire weather index, and many other things. The map allows you to zoom in on an area and see if there's any forest fire activity in the region that you're heading into, or if there's past stuff. So if you're going to a region, you'll be able to see, oh, there was a fire there last year. So don't expect lofty pines because they're not going to be there. Yeah. Right? That sort of deal. They do have a disclaimer on their site saying the information, maps, and data service is available through the Canadian Wildland Fire Information System. Are approximations based on available data and may not show the most current fire situation. For additional maps and information on the current conditions, please visit the Fire Management Agency website for your region of interest, province, territory, or park. But this is a pretty cool map. So it's a map of Canada and some of the states that border Canada for a few things.
About halfway down to the states. So it didn't give you...
Idaho, Wyoming.
Exactly, right?
Minnesota.
North and South Dakota. Yada, yada, yada. But the reason I came across it is because there was a fire near Fort Nelson. And so Monday morning when I got to work, it was on CBC. It talked about they were actively evacuating Fort Nelson because of a fire. So I started Googling it. It's like, oh, what's going on? Like, let me... And and I've come across these maps like last summer. I came, wasn't this website, I don't know what one I found last summer, but this one here is so detailed, and it and there's so many possibilities that it provides. Because so you can see active fires, you can see what areas burn, and now they say it's an estimation, mm-hmm. it's a best guess of what has burned, and it gives you active hotspots, it gives you, you know, estimated burn areas, but it was what also it gives you a history. So I think it goes back to as far back as 1909 for Canada.
Really?
Yeah, something like that.
I never looked into the history. I was just looking at where everything is now.
Yeah, and so it gives a long range of history. But what I find neat for that is if you're Woodland Caribou, if you're going mm-hmm. to Woodland Caribou, and it's like, well, what area burned last year?
Right.
I want to avoid it because I don't get everything black when I do portages and whatever, right? Or especially if there's an active fire, you don't want to go that area this year.
Yeah.
But it's what's neat is when we went to... Was it Wabakimi? I think it was Wabakimi last year. There was a section where we came through that showed, and we were just trying to best guess it. It's like, well, according to the growth that we see here, like we stopped, we did a walk through the forest that was, you know, the trees were about 5 feet high and so on. It's like, what, 5-10 years ago, there was a fire. Yeah. Went to a narrow section where the trees were about 15-20 feet high and spread out, mostly birches. So it was like, maybe 20-year-old fire. So it would be neat to be able to look at the map afterwards and say where I went. Well, especially beforehand, say, okay, I'm going to pass through these areas. I know that last year wasn't the fire, so I'm not going to be walking through charcoal. But also my planned route, I can go through and say, this area had recently burned within the last 5 years. I know I'm going to see some, you know, fresh saplings and whatever. So it's neat for that to be able to see the historical, give you a better estimate of how old the undergrowth is going to be. So
if you see how it's coming back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we were so curious so many times. It's like, well, how long ago did this burn? You can see that it's recovering.
Yep.
There's new growth. You see a bunch of birches coming up. And
well, Woodland Caribou when we were there.
Yeah.
We went into one area that had burned the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything we had at the end of that day was covered in black.
Well, there was Jim Baird. They had gone through Quebec, and on one of the portages, there was a recent fire. They couldn't find the portage, so they mm-hmm. were bushwhacking, and they were black. All their packs and their food packs and everything was just soot.
My yellow pack?
Yeah.
It was black.
Yeah. Just covered
climbing over logs and stuff that had fallen.
Yeah.
And like
exactly,
all your
right?
pants, everything's just covered in black.
I smell smoke.
You gotta take everything off, just wash it all and whatnot. But then we went through other areas where there had been a fire 5 years previous.
Yeah.
And then we went through another area that had fires, like I said, 15 years.
Yeah.
So you definitely see that growth.
Exactly.
Right?
So some of the first trees to come back are like birches and stuff. And then coniferous or whatever, the pine tree stuff. Once they come back, the birches die off, then you start getting the older forest. And so it would be neat to actually stand in a forest and say, according to this, this fire happened 25 years ago.
This is a 25-year-old forest.
25-year-old forest. And how many times have you gone canoeing and you can see just the husk of the stump?
Yep.
It's like, these trees are like 80, 100 years old. And I can see that there was a fire here a long time ago. And so it would be neat to see that historical value. Like, granted, it only goes back so far.
Yeah.
But it'd be neat to that historical value of going on a trip, doing a portage and looking at the trees and getting an actual representation of
how long ago
the fire was.
Yeah. That's
and
cool.
Of course there's current tools where it's like, is there a fire there right now? I'm not going to go there after all.
That's what I'd be using this for sure.
Yes.
Is the, you know, like, oh yeah, there's a fire going in here. Yeah. Going up this way, there's a fire about 100 kilometers that way. And if the weather is saying it's going to be,
mm-hmm.
you know, if it's a small fire, whoop-de-doo. But if it's massive fires over there, I'm going to be getting smoke coming through my way.
Remember last year when we went in June? So it was just on the last night where the wind shifted. And so we didn't really see any smoke. We didn't really detect anything except on the last night.
Until the last night.
The wind shifted and the wind came from Quebec. headed west.
Yep.
And so we had clear skies the whole trip. And then the last night, like 3 a.m., it's like, it woke me up. It's like, I smell smoke.
Yeah.
And then when we got out on
Opiongo,
it's like, we can't see very far.
Yeah.
It was smoky.
Well, we were following the Incomplete Angler's book, and they said, you come out of here and you can see the old farm way down there. I can't even see shore. I can't even see the point.
It looks like we're on the ocean.
Yeah. So, but yeah, being able to say where the fires are and predict, you know, maybe we go that way next year and we do a trip over this way this year.
It's a good tool. And like we were saying, like not everybody listening to us are in the States, but most governments do provide this service. Like this one here is a Canadian Forestry Service or Canadian Wildland Fire Information System. And it does give some details for the U.S., the upper states. And but I'm sure there's some, if we looked, we'd find some more details on the U.S. and right?
But I mean, this one here is specifically, I mean, North Saskatchewan, Alberta, and BC especially.
A lot.
Already started this year.
Well, we talked in the spring when I read that story, they talked about the overwintering fires.
Mm-hmm.
They get into the ground in the peat bogs and whatever, in the peat moss, and it smolders, and then as soon as it dries out again, it starts. So way at the time, if I remember correctly, they had like BC and Alberta had about 106 or so overwintering fires that they were watching to start back up again because they never went out. Yeah, and they're back.
And this has out of control fires they're holding, fires that are under control, and fires that are under watch.
Yes.
On it. So there's so many different tools on this when it comes to fires. You might want to just double check it before you're heading out on a trip.
What was the side menu? It was
So WFIS.CFS. And that's that will take you right to, or just Google Canadian Wildland Fire Information System and click Interactive Map.
Yeah.
If you go to WFIS.CFS, it has Interactive Map on the left side of the page. Just click that and you'll come to this one and just explore it and all the different options and different things you can click on.
On the map, upper right corner of the map is where you can pick through
overlays
like historical fires, current fires, hot spots, burn areas. There's a lot of choices to go through. So it's kind of fun to go through that menu list to pick out the different things that you can, different historical and current information that's available.
Yeah, fire danger, fire perimeter estimates. So there's a lot of information
here. Yeah, a lot of detail. So, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's a good tool to have if you're looking to be, especially northern provinces here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff going on. So.
Yeah, Fort Nelson, Fort Mac, there's all kinds
of... go east. Because apparently nothing's happening out
there. Currently there's not a lot of fires out this way.
Yeah.
So there's a lot in Saskatchewan and northern Alberta, northern BC, and so on.
Yeah, I think Nova Scotia's good this time of year.
Yeah.
and you notice that Greenland has no...
there's
no fires in Greenland.
We may not have data for that.
Yeah.
There's no fires on the glacier?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Anywhere around the Arctic Ocean, there's nothing. There's no fires at all.
Yeah.
That's all I got right now. You got anything else?
Same. I got nothing.
I got nothing.
I came in with nothing.
Came in with nothing. Drank a beer. Talked. Leaving with nothing. Sounds like a bad game show.
I know.
Hey, here's some nope, there's no lovely parting gift for you today.
Just, you get nothing.
Here's a dirty glass and a snotty Kleenex. Get out.
Yeah, bird nest soup.
Oh, bird nest soup. Ugh. I don't know anybody that's actually had bird nest
soup. Yeah. Now, I did
unless they
say...
they did and they didn't
I
tell
did
me.
Say the birds make them from bird spit, but technically it's made from bird saliva.
What's the difference?
Technical terms.
Just because a bird can't go.
Gotta be specific. And it's hardened. It's kind of a crystalline structure. You have to heat it up and melt the. It's like, I don't know what to call it. It's like toffee, hard toffee, and you melt it down into soft, delicious bird spit toffee.
You're not selling it. You're just not selling it.
It's a big thing.
I know it's a big thing, but I don't know why.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good question. Who? Oh, there's so many things that you go, who was the first person?
See that big bag, 100 years out that cow? Whatever comes out of that, I'm drinking a glass
well,
of it.
Well, milk makes sense. Milk does make sense. But when you talk
about... Hey, look at that tree. What's coming out of that tree? Let's boil that down and put it on our pancakes.
But that's so natural. Like that.
It's not natural.
The indigenous discovered that years and years ago. Who knows how or why, but...
Right?
But a bird's nest... A bird's nest. Hey, let's take
boil
this,
that. Let's throw a few things in there. Maybe some chicken stock.
Well, I think
boil these bird spit boogers down something. And
I remember reading what would they call it, bird crystal or something, because it's a hardened bird saliva, right? So they called it bird crystal.
You keep saying, but I don't know.
I'm still not selling it.
Talking out your ass for all I know.
No, it's true. It's true. I don't know why, but I read up on it one day.
And it has hair of puppy dog in it. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I believe you. But all I think of when I hear bird nest is these things made with twigs
and bird
raccoon hair.
And like the baby birds are pooping in the nest.
Yeah.
And
hey, let's boil that down and have one for lunch. No. No, thank you.
No, let's not.
Fill your boots. I'm stuffed from all the donuts I ate at breakfast. You can have my share of bird nest soup.
Just think of it. This bird's nest soup is expensive.
Is it?
Oh, yes. It's a delicacy.
Where? Well, like, Asia, but why? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm flabbergasted. I don't know all this stuff. Maybe I don't know because I don't want to know.
Maybe. Yeah, that's a... Powerful option.
That's, yeah. Edible bird nests, also known as swallow nests, are bird nests created from solidified saliva by edible nest swiftlets, Indian swiftlets, and other swiftlets of the genera Aerodramus hydrocaus Schulendenapas and Colocalia, which are harvested for human consumption.
Mm-mm.
Hey, who wants some melted bird loogies?
And you're hoping the person who's harvesting it is discerning enough to be picking out the bird poop and separating it so you only get the saliva.
Takes them 30 days to build. For 100 years, bird nest soup has been prized for its health benefits, especially increasing libido.
Mm-hmm.
Is bird nest soup good for you? Just Google it. I'm not going down this rabbit hole. Everybody else can. If you're listening to this and you're hanging on the edge of your seat, Google this and you just go down that rabbit hole. Yeah. Fill your boots. No, thanks.
It's a licensed industry. Like, it's controlled over there.
They can have it. They can have it. You can have it. They can have it.
Because during nesting season, the bird nests are protected because they don't want to harm the hatchlings and stuff, right? So you're only allowed to harvest when the birds have abandoned the nests.
Hmm. Anyway.
It's done sustainably.
If sustainable bird spit. All right. Other than that, I think I'm going to lose my lunch.
Yum.
What can we talk about next week that's just going to turn everybody's stomach?
Isn't there a delicacy that you can eat partially grown duck in egg, but it's allowed to ferment.
Oh, century eggs.
Something like that.
Something like that. I don't know. Prairie oysters. Anywho, you got nothing else this week?
No.
May 25th, we're going to look at heading to the Canadian Canoe Museum. If you're around, drop us a line, let us know. We'll see if we can all hook up there at some point and ransack the place.
Yeah, maybe I'll bring a thermos of bird nest soup.
A bird nest soup for everybody to try. Who wants to try it?
Not me.
Where did everybody go? I'm hearing crickets. Crickets, you can eat crickets.
Yes, you can.
Crickets and ants and grasshoppers. Oh, my. Anyway. If you want to find out more about us, you can find it at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram. If you want to download or stream our episodes, you can find them on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podbean, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. And you can find them on YouTube. Or you can go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com. You can stream or download all our episodes there. And if you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.